40 greetings and happy Friday to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
The National Basketball Association's Vice President and Managing Director for Africa, Amadou Gallo Fall, is my special guest on the show. And Amadou joins us now by telephone from Johannesburg, South Africa. Amadou, welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Thank you, Sonny. My pleasure.
Great to have you on the program, Amadou. Can you tell our VOA basketball fans how you first got interested in the sport?
Wow. Yeah, just like most young people across the continent, we all first, you know, maybe our exposure to sport is by kicking something, you know? So as we all grew up playing football, I was taller than most people in my age class. And, you know, I have a brother who's taller than me. He was studying in France, and he came back one summer and brought a basketball. And, you know, just I started messing with it. And everybody was suggesting that, hey, I should play basketball because I was so tall. But where I was before I moved to Dakar, I wasn't, you know, I didn't have access to a court. So I only started playing, you know, later in high school, actually.
Did you play at the collegiate level, Amadou?
Yes, I played in Washington, D.C. Actually, that's how I got to the U.S. I met a Peace Corps volunteer who went back to D.C. and recommended to a coach that he met a young guy from Africa, from Senegal, who was 6'8". So the coach sent me scholarship letters without never seeing me play. I think it was good enough to hear 6'8". So, you know, that's how I got to D.C. I went to school there at the University of the District of Columbia. Graduated in 1993.
Well, as we talk now, Amadou, you're now instrumental in the NBA in Africa. Can you talk about the league's history in Africa, especially that Basketball Without Borders program?
Yeah, so it's a long history and tradition between the NBA and the continent, and you know, we could all date it back to 1984. I'm pretty sure there may have been some, you know, player visits before, because I ran into some legends who've talked about their experiences, you know, in the early 70s. But really, for us, I'm thinking 1984 when Hakeem Olajuwon got drafted first overall. And then, you know, subsequently, you got Manute Bol, Dikembe Mutombo, who's now our global ambassador. Those were the pioneers who really paved the way. Now we have a host of, you know, young stars from the continent, from multiple countries. I think in the early 90s, 1993 exactly, then Commissioner David Stern led a delegation, including Patrick Ewing and Alonzo Mourning, Dikembe Mutombo, and actually our colleague Kim Bahuli, who is the Senior Vice President for Basketball Operations International, for a visit to Johannesburg. And in 1994, Commissioner Stern was actually present at President Nelson Mandela's inauguration as President of South Africa. So it's a long tradition that culminated in the start of Basketball Without Borders Africa Camp in 2003. You know, and we've been conducting that flagship basketball development program in which we partner with FIBA since 2003 and did it every year, and that eventually led to us deciding to open an office and have the physical presence on the ground because we saw tremendous potential for basketball development and, most importantly, an opportunity to really, really have an impact in African communities using our game as a conduit.
Amadou, you mentioned a couple of those pioneers from Africa, Mutombo and Olajuwon. They both kind of honed their basketball skills at the university level here in the USA before going to the NBA. How do you see basketball development changing in Africa in the future?
You know, in December of 2016, just a few months ago, we announced the launch of NBA Academy Africa. As part of a global network of elite training centers, the NBA is launching around the world that focus on a holistic player development approach, you know, where young people who have the skills and the talent, the potential to grow into elite players, you know, will have an opportunity year-round to be, you know, surrounded and put in an environment that is conducive to elite development, just like, you know, what happens in some of the most advanced countries. I think what's common about Dikembe and, you know, Hakim's story, and to a certain extent, some of us who came, you know, in the college ranks, you know, much later, we basically stumbled into the game, you know, by, I would say, pure luck. I talked to Hakim. He would say that there was a coach from the U.S. who came to his school, and then 6 months later, he's in Houston, going to the University of Houston. Dikembe went to the U.S., not on a basketball scholarship, but he was a pre-med student, had a scholarship from USAID, and hence he didn't play his freshman year at Georgetown. So just to tell you that, you know, these guys, there's so many probably other defenders or potential Hakim who were never discovered, but who probably were equally as talented. So now with the launch of NBA Academy Africa, you know, we are taking a proactive role into making sure that these players from Africa are not coming into the NBA or the college ranks just by pure luck. Certainly, since we launched Basketball Without Borders in 2003, there's been 9 players from the camps who have been drafted in the NBA. Some of the names we know, Gorgui Dieng at Minnesota, Joel Embiid in Philadelphia, who was here in 2011, and Pascal Siakam being the last one drafted this last June. There's a growing number of players from Africa in the continent, but I'm really excited about the opportunity now that the NBA Africa Academy presents to, you know, not only go out and identify young elite talent from across the continent, but get them in a place where they will undergo elite world-class type of training because we've hired NBA coaches, NBA trainers, physiotherapists, and they will be given all the tools to really maximize their potential. So the number of players from Africa in the continent in our league is only going to continue to grow, and they will come in with better skills, they will be better prepared. And, you know, to note also that they will be going to school. So when I talk about that holistic approach, this, we are going to teach these, you know, young people the fundamentals of the game, but we parlay it with important life skills that will help them to grow to be complete human beings.
Amadou, during the recent NBA All-Star Weekend in New Orleans, Commissioner Adam Silver announced the NBA will be returning to Johannesburg for the NBA Africa Game 2017 on August 5th. Can you talk a little bit about that contest and maybe a few of the players who will be participating?
Very exciting announcement during All-Star Weekend. And again, you know, from Commissioner Stern before to now Commissioner Silver, there's always been a very strong commitment to the continent, you know, and I think it helps in our work to have senior leadership behind our efforts and see the, you know, the opportunity here to grow something special. So we hosted the first ever NBA game on the continent in 2015, in August 1st, here in Johannesburg. We're very excited to have the opportunity to do it again, moving to a bigger venue at the Ticket Pro Dome. Team Africa versus Team World. We're going to have a constellation of stellar players in, you know, the two different sides. But most importantly, the excitement is around all the great community work that is going to be taking place. You know, the game is going to benefit some, you know, global and local charities. And our players, both the African players and the players from the rest of the world, are very excited to be coming again. We've announced a couple of them just, you know, to, as beginners. Emmanuel Mudie from the Democratic Republic of Congo, one of the, you know, young, bright stars, you know, that is going to be in the league for years at the point guard position playing for the Denver Nuggets. We have also Bismack Biyombo, who played in the first game. He's from DRC also. And on the other side, we have one of the really most improved players in our league, CJ McCollum from the Portland Trail Blazers, and we'll be making future announcements very soon. So we have a long ways to go in terms of all the exciting players we are going to announce in the future weeks.
Voice of America.
Amadou, the Voice of America has a huge audience in Nigeria, Africa's most populous country. And I've had several Nigerians tell me how they'd love to see the NBA Africa game go to Nigeria. What's your reaction?
Look, Nigeria is an extremely important market for us. We right now have a program in Abuja in partnership with ExxonMobil called Power Forward going into year four. So, you know, the presence is there. And when I talk about earlier that long history that the league has with the continent, Nigeria comes top of mind. Obviously, this is the home of Nigeria gave us Hakeem Olajuwon, a top 50 greatest of all time. And we've had a number of other players that have played in the league, in terms of your Obinna Ekezi, Julius Nwosu, and you have a host of young players right now who are Nigerian descent. One of the brightest stars in our league, Yanis Antetokounmpo, who plays for Greece, but you know, obviously his family is from Nigeria. So we're looking forward to continuing to, you know, bring programming into Nigeria. You know, obviously we know that we count them amongst our, you know, biggest fans. Our broadcast partner, Kwese, has a huge focus on Nigeria. And I'm very glad that our fans are able to watch NBA games and NBA programming across the multiple platforms that Kwese has in Nigeria. And this Africa game coming up will be broadcasted live there. So it's just a matter of time. But there's, you know, certainly we're excited about all the great things and activities we can bring to Nigeria in the future and what we are doing right now.
Finally, Amadou, as you mentioned earlier, many African youth grow up playing with some type of ball. Often they're kicking the ball, soccer or football, very popular in Africa. Can you make some general comments about the growth of basketball in Africa since you've been involved with the NBA's organizational efforts? How has it grown on the continent?
I think when we talked about, you know, our Basketball Without Borders program, which remains the flagship grassroots initiative we have on the continent, and you see the growing number of African players coming in the league, you know, you could see a big signal. And now with the launch of NBA Academy Africa, as I said, now no longer, you know, these young players will just make it by luck, but there's going to be more of a predictable path to their growth and development. And we have a junior NBA platform, this league that we are launching in multiple countries. Today we are in 9 countries with 11 leagues, and this coming weekend, we're going to launch our 10th Junior NBA League. This is the base of the pyramid. It's about making the game accessible to young boys and girls. And once you do that, obviously, you know, the fan base grow, the number of participants in the sport grow, and talent emerge. So the game is growing. It's the number 2 sport globally. It is the number 2 sport on the continent. And I'm really excited and fortunate to be in a position to continue to, you know, lead the charges. And throughout our travels across the continent, last week we just launched our first junior NBA league in Brazzaville, Congo, where Serge Ibaka is from, in presence of the Minister of Sport and the Minister of Higher Education. And then we moved to Abidjan in Ivory Coast, where we launched a girls league on top of the league we had for the boys last year. So there's tremendous momentum and interest among young people in our sports, so the future of basketball is extremely bright on the continent.
Amadou Gallo-Fall, leading the NBA's charge in Africa. Thank you very much for talking with us on the Sunny Side of Sports and the Voice of America.
Thank you, Sunny, and best of luck. Hope to cross paths soon, and hope to see you here in Johannesburg on August 5th for the second edition of NBA Africa Game.
Thanks, Amadou. Amadou Gallo-Fall is the NBA's vice president and managing director for Africa, and Amadou spoke with us from Johannesburg, South Africa.
This is Dikembe Mutombo. I am from Africa. Malaria kills thousands of children every day. Don't let your child be one of them. Make sure they sleep under a treated mosquito net. Beating malaria is like winning at basketball. You need to get to the net.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. This Sunday's edition pays tribute to a fallen young talent from Liberia, Quincy B.
You're my fantasy. I'm Quincy B.
You'll also meet rising star from Kenya, Fee.
But bring your crew, you can let them know. We in town, they should dress up for the show. We are bringing down this town.
Plus, awesome music from Mali, Zimbabwe, and Guinea-Bissau. Don't miss it. Tune in to VOA Africa's FM station Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Thanks, Heather, and rest in peace, Quincy B. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Happy Friday, Andrew.
Very happy Friday to you as well, Sunny.
Welcome back, Andrew. What is trending in the sports world on this Friday?
Well, let's stick with basketball, but not professional basketball. We'll go to college basketball. As we mentioned on the show, a number of tournaments are going on ahead of the big NCAA tournament next week, what they call conference tournaments, and these will determine some of the teams that will go to the big dance in the NCAA tournament. And among the teams that are playing are the University of Michigan. Well, they've had quite a week leading up to the Big Ten tournament, of course, in their Big Ten conference. They were preparing to take off for Washington, D.C. here, where the Big Ten tournament is going on at the Verizon Center, just a few kilometers down the road from us.
Within walking distance.
Within walking distance, not too far a walk. But they were preparing to take off from Washington, D.C., for Washington, D.C. from Michigan. But as they started to take off, the plane encountered high winds. They aborted their takeoff, and the plane skidded off the runway about 350 meters beyond the runway before it landed in it came to rest in a ditch. It never actually got off the ground. It just kind of skidded off the runway there. Now, the good news is the players are all okay. The coaches are all okay. Everyone who was on the flight was all right. But the bad news was that the plane was damaged and they could not take off that day. Now, this is on Wednesday, preparing for their game on Thursday. So what did they do? They went back to their dorms, back to the campus, and took off Thursday morning, flew into D.C. with, I don't know, maybe an hour to spare before they took the court. Now, there are two social media elements to the story. First is the plane crash itself. We saw a lot of pictures and video from this kind of field where the plane came to rest, from players who were on the flight, from some of the managers, and some really scary images. You see the plane there. It's not a place the plane's supposed to be. And in fact, when they pan around, you see the runway and kind of the fence where the plane went through the fence off the runway. So that's the one social media element. The other is, now that they're in D.C., what they have to wear, because all of their luggage is still on that plane that crashed and they don't have access to it. So what they've been wearing so far in their first game, they wore their practice jerseys. So it was a very odd sight. They had these kind of yellow, look like something that high schoolers would wear or somebody in middle school that's in gym class, with blue shorts and whatever sneakers they were wearing. It was no uniformity to their sneakers. They didn't have any of the shoes that they normally play with. And in fact, Coach Jim Boeheim said he only has one suit to wear on the sidelines because all his luggage is in the plane as well. And his quote was, "We have washers and dryers in D.C. We'll get it done." And indeed they did. Despite being in a plane crash, despite getting to the tournament late, their first game they beat the University of Illinois 75-55, beat them handily. And now today they will play Purdue University, the top seed in the tournament. So we'll see if they can keep the good times rolling. There's been some jokes on social media saying if they win the Big Ten tournament, do they wear those practice jerseys in the NCAA tournament? Do they keep wearing them until they win, until they lose, if they keep winning?
Well, I know we'll find out the field for March Madness, the main NCAA tournament, I think on Sunday evening, Andrew, when these various conference championship tournaments end. But how about some March Madness trivia with the University of Michigan? The state of Michigan has won 3 national titles, Andrew. How many has the University of Michigan won in men's basketball?
Oh, gosh. I think it's just the one, I think.
You are absolutely correct.
Okay, good.
Just one national title in 1989 when Steve Fisher, you mentioned his name before the show, Steve Fisher was the head coach of the University of Michigan. They beat Seton Hall 80-79 in the final.
Wow, close.
Very close final. The state of Michigan has 2 other national titles, one courtesy of Magic Johnson, the great Magic Johnson. Michigan State has won 2 titles, 2 national titles in men's basketball. So Michigan, a proud pedigree in men's hoops.
And 2 teams trying to make it, Michigan State and Michigan. We'll see if they can get there to the big dance.
What else is trending out there, Andrew?
We talked last week about a partnership between Facebook and Liga MX, the Mexican Soccer League, to stream soccer matches on Facebook with Univision partnering as well. Well, now we have a new partnership here in the U.S. Facebook is partnering with Major League Soccer, and they're going to be showing some games here starting next week. They're going to have at least about 24 games they're going to be streaming throughout the course of the season. It's only available in the U.S., but for our international listeners, the pre- and post-game analyses and kind of the pre-show and post-show will be available globally, so people can watch that. Even though they can't watch the matches, they can hear some of the analysis from the experts. But another example of how social media is trying to get into the sports game. People are moving from the television to the computer screen and the phone screen to watch sports.
Yes, indeed, Andrew. What else is trending out there?
Well, great story. Great South African adventurer Chris Burdish has set a number of world records crossing the Atlantic Ocean unassisted and unsupported on a stand-up paddleboard, kind of the big surfboards that you steer with an oar. His is a little bit different. He had a little cabin on his. He had some solar panels to power things. But all the power of moving that was him. And
wow.
4,500 nautical miles, or about 7,200 kilometers across the Atlantic Ocean, took him 93 days from December 6th to March 9th when he finally landed in Antigua. And it's for the world record and to show his kind of prowess in the water, but it's also for a good cause. He's doing it for several charities to raise awareness and to raise funds for them. But a lot of attention on that, a very cool story.
And you mentioned those solar panels on his paddle boat, Andrew. I guess he's probably hoping he was on the sunny side, right?
I would guess so. And sunny side and smooth sailing, for sure.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOASunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOASunnySports. Just about 30 seconds left in the program, Andrew. What else is trending out there?
Well, a big story out of the National Football League, a lot of players being traded and moved in the past couple days. And Jimmy Garoppolo, the backup quarterback for the New England Patriots, put up an Instagram post at 4 o'clock this morning saying, "So grateful for my time in New England. Peace out, Boston," sparking all these trade rumors. Turns out it was either a hoax or a hack. He's not going anywhere, but we don't know who put this up on his Instagram account. They're looking into that. But he's staying in New England for now.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Have a good weekend, Andrew.
You too.
And that wraps up the March 10th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Peter Hundley. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is working with its partner, Rwanda, to help children read. On February 16th, the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, held a launch event at Groupe Scolaire Kinyinya to highlight the U.S. government's early grade reading project, which aims to improve the Kinyarwanda reading skills of 1 million children over the next 4 years. The Early Grade Reading Project is implemented in partnership with the Ministry of Education and the Rwanda Education Board, and it consists of three activities that are valued at over 68 billion Rwandan francs, or about 80 million U.S. dollars. The U.S. government's partnership to support Kinyarwanda literacy is built upon evidence that literacy in the first language that students speak and understand is foundational for their success in school. The Early Grade Reading Project's three complementary activities are the Mureke Dusam Let's Read activity engages parents, communities, and literacy champions to help children embrace a culture of reading outside of school. Mureke Dusam is implemented by Save the Children in collaboration with the Rwandan Education Board. The Soma Umenye Read and Know activity will train teachers and provide extra reading materials to schools. It will also strengthen the capacity of the Rwanda Education Board and advocate for policies that support reading. And the Teacher Mentorship Community of Practice Program, implemented by FHI 360, U.S.-based public health and international development NGO, has developed an online platform for teachers to access teaching materials and forums and to take teaching certification courses online. U.S. Ambassador to Rwanda, Erica Barks Ruggles, highlighted the importance of partnership with the Ministry of Education and civil society. Also on hand for the launch were Rwanda's Minister of State, in charge of primary and secondary education, and the Director General of the Rwanda Education Board. The three worked with parents from Gikumbi District to create homemade reading materials for children. Our partnership with the government of Rwanda, teachers, community leaders, and parents is key to achieving Rwanda's literacy goals as set out in Vision 2020, said Ambassador Barks Ruggles. We are working with all our partners to support children's reading ability so that every child has the opportunity to succeed and help build Rwanda's future.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there.
VOA.
On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music.
Wake up, dance this music.
Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we look at Ghana, 60 years after becoming the first black African country to gain independence. The 1957 precedent inspired other nations to seek their sovereignty, and 17 African countries gained independence in 1960. That's right here on the next Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.